Okay, so picture this. You're a lawyer, right? And you're prepping for this domestic violence case. And at first, it seems like, kind of an open and shut burglary case. You have your client and her estranged husband broke into her apartment, did some damage, stole her purse. But then, get this, the defense, they pull out this like super obscure law and they're claiming that spouses, well, they can't legally exclude each other from their homes.
Oh, wow.
So it makes you wonder, like, can a marriage certificate really just give someone a free pass to just like terrorize their spouse?
Yeah, that's wild.
It is wild. It's like kind of a crazy scenario. And that's actually what we're diving into today.
Interesting.
So I'm curious, from your perspective, what's so fascinating about this case?
Well, what really gets me is how this seemingly simple property law could like totally derail a very serious criminal case.
Yeah.
It really makes you think about the limits of marital rights when we're talking about personal safety.
Yeah, for sure. And that's exactly what the Ohio Supreme Court had to grapple with in this case, State v. Lilly. It's this like super intense case that really shines a light on the whole intersection of like domestic violence, property rights, and criminal law all kind of coming together.
Definitely.
So we're going to break it all down for everyone. Like, how did this seemingly minor legal detail like spark this huge debate that went all the way to the Ohio Supreme Court?
Just a big one.
It is a big one. But before we get into all the legal stuff, I think it's important to understand the story behind this whole thing. Who are these people? What happened? What led up to this legal showdown? So could you maybe set the stage for us? Like, who is Harold Lilly and what were those events that kind of set this whole thing in motion?
So Harold Lilly was charged with burglary after this honestly terrifying incident at his estranged wife's apartment. But what's really important here is the whole context. This wasn't just some random one-off event. The entire day was basically marked by this like escalating violence, starting with arguments. Then it escalated to physical assault.
Wow.
And it all culminated with Lilly's wife. She had to flee her own home and call the police to get help. It was really bad.
That's awful.
No.
And so it gets even like more chilling because Lily later actually admitted to breaking into the apartment.
He did.
And keep in mind, this is a place where he no longer lived, right? He didn't have a key, he didn't have any of his stuff there.
Nope.
And he vandalized her car, stole her purse. He even like hid in the attic.
He did.
It paints this really disturbing picture. So, I mean, obviously the prosecution saw this as a pretty straightforward burglary case, right? But Lily's defense team, they had kind of a surprise up their sleeve. They pulled out this Ohio Revised Code, section 3103.04, which basically states that spouses can't exclude each other from their dwellings. So they were essentially saying that Lily couldn't be charged with burglary because, legally speaking, that apartment was still partly his. And get this, the appellate court actually agreed with the
They
defense.
did.
They actually overturned Lily's conviction. It's kind of shocking. It's a crazy example of how legal loopholes can like sometimes have these crazy unintended consequences, especially in a case as serious as this one. I mean, thankfully, the Ohio Supreme Court stepped in to address this problem head on. And they recognized the danger here, right, of letting this civil statute become this kind of like shield for criminal behavior. So they had to ask this really important question, does this law, this property law, does it really supersede these criminal charges, especially when the spouses are obviously living totally separate lives? It's a big question.
It is.
So what did they decide? I have to know.
Okay, so they issued a resounding no.
Oh, no.
The Ohio Supreme Court held that that specific code, the Ohio Revised Code, section 3103.04, it doesn't apply in criminal cases like this one. They were very clear. They said a spouse can absolutely face burglary charges if the victim has sole custody and control of the residence, and that's regardless of their marital status.
So basically, they're saying a marriage certificate isn't a get out of jail free card,
Exactly.
which makes sense to me. But what was like their reasoning behind all of it? Like, how did they get to that decision?
Well, their reasoning was based on three key pillars.
Three pillars.
Three, the first one. They established this really clear boundary between, civil and criminal law. They were saying that, like, marital privileges, those don't automatically give you immunity from being prosecuted. It's like, imagine if any law that had to do with marriage, like tax benefits, could be used to get you out of a criminal case. The whole justice system would fall apart.
So they were basically saying you can't use a law like that, one that's designed for property disputes, to, like, escape consequences for committing a violent crime.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you can't just, you know, mix and match. And the second pillar of their decision focused on this idea of custody and control.
Okay.
So, you know, they weren't just looking at simple ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Since Lily's wife was the one living in the apartment, paying the bills, you know, basically running her own independent household, she had that sole custody and control, which meant Lily going in there was totally illegal. Think of it this way. Even if you and someone else co-own a vacation home, right? You can't just barge in whenever you feel like it if they're the one actively using it.
That's true, yeah.
Same principle.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and it really highlights that importance of recognizing individual autonomy, you know, within a marriage, especially when we're talking about personal safety.
Right, right. But there were three pillars, right? What was that final point?
Yeah.
The one that kind of sealed the deal.
Oh, yeah. So that third pillar was all about protecting victims of domestic violence. The court really emphasized that interpreting this statute, you know, the way the defense wanted, could have had some really bad, even disastrous consequences for victims who were trying to seek safety and justice. They were basically saying that, you know, it would essentially create this loophole where abusers could exploit their marital status to commit crimes and get away with it.
Wow.
And, you know, they even brought up similar rulings from other states showing that there's this growing trend toward prioritizing victim safety over these, like, outdated interpretations of marital rights.
So it sounds like this wasn't just about Lily and his wife. This decision kind of set this huge precedent for future cases, for domestic violence cases.
Absolutely. And this is where State v. Lily becomes, you know, more than just this case about burglary. It's a landmark decision that really changed how we think about the legal landscape around domestic violence, at least in Ohio.
I see, yeah.
It really gave prosecutors a powerful tool to pursue these cases more effectively, even when the abuser is, you know, married to the victim.
That's a huge win for victims then.
For sure.
It shows that the system is evolving to better protect, you know, the people who are most vulnerable.
Yeah.
But you mentioned earlier that there were some concurring opinions in this case. What were those all about?
Right, right. So while all the justices agreed, you know, in the end, about the outcome that Lily was definitely guilty of burglary, there was some debate about whether the defense should have even been allowed to use this, you know, this whole spousal exclusion statute thing during the appeal.
Oh, interesting.
Like Justice Cook, for example, argued that this specific defense should have been brought up way earlier, like during the trial itself, and not just, you know, suddenly appear later on appeal as a way to try to overturn the whole conviction.
So they were kind of nitpicking the legal strategy a little bit.
Exactly. And it highlights how important it is to be really careful about the process, the procedure in legal cases,
mm-hmm.
missteps in the process, like, you know, not bringing up a certain argument at the right time can really come back to bite you.
Oh, for sure. So let's kind of like shift gears a bit and talk about why this case is so important for our listeners, for lawyers and law students. Like, what are the key takeaways here, the things they should really understand about State v. Lily?
Okay, so first and foremost, I think it really clarifies those limits of civil statutes when we're dealing with criminal law.
Right.
You can't just pick and choose laws from different areas and expect them to apply everywhere.
Yeah.
It all comes down to context.
Context matters.
It really does. Second, Lily emphasizes how important custody and control are when we're trying to figure out who's responsible, who's liable in these cases, especially when property is involved.
So it's not enough to just say, hey, we're married, I have a right to be here.
Exactly.
The court is going to look at who's actually living in this space, you know, who's in control.
More nuance than that.
Yeah. And the third big takeaway, which I think we've already kind of touched on, is how crucial it is to bring up legal arguments at the right time, at the right stage of the process.
Right.
If you wait too long, if you delay, you might not be able to use that argument later on.
Oh.
But there's one more piece of this puzzle, and this is where things get really interesting.
Oh, okay. I'm intrigued. What is it? Well, you know, State v. Lily gave us a lot of clarity for situations where spouses live separately, but what happens when they're living together?
I see.
How do courts figure out who has custody and control when it's a shared living space? That's a big question.
Yeah, that's a great question. Things definitely get a lot more complicated when you're dealing with a shared home.
Oh, absolutely. And that's exactly what we're going to dive into next.
Yeah, it does feel like we're stepping into this like legal gray area, you know? Mm-hmm. When a couple is sharing a home, how do you even begin to untangle those property rights? Like, how do you figure out who actually has that custody and control?
Right. It's definitely a tricky situation. You can't just, point to the deed or the lease agreement and call it a day.
Right.
Courts have to look deeper. They'll consider all sorts of things like who's contributing financially to the house, whose name is on those utility bills, stuff like that. They might even look at like patterns of behavior, like who's really making those day-to-day decisions about the home.
Sounds like this giant puzzle, especially when you throw in the whole domestic violence context, right? Where there might be all this like power imbalance and coercion going
Oh,
on.
absolutely. And this is where, State v. Lilly, as, groundbreaking as it was, it doesn't give us all the answers. Like, it provides a good framework for those separate residences. But when we're talking about those shared dwellings, a lot of it is still up to, like, how the judges interpret things.
So what advice would you give to, lawyers who are dealing with these domestic violence cases where the couple is living together? Like, how do they navigate all of this legal ambiguity?
I think the key is to gather as much detailed evidence as possible. Evidence that really demonstrates that the victim is the one who has control over the space, even though they're sharing it with the abuser. So we're talking about things like, can you show that they pay more of the rent or the mortgage? Are they the main contact for the landlord or the utility companies? Can you get testimony from neighbors or friends, people who can really back up the victim's story and explain what their role in that household really is?
So it's almost like you have to build a case within a case, right? Like first you have to prove custody and control, and then you can even start to address the actual crime.
That's a really good way to put it. Yeah, it really shows just how complex these domestic violence cases can be.
Right.
They require this kind of like multi-layered approach where you're not just looking at the criminal act itself, but you have to understand those underlying dynamics of the relationship, the power dynamics, and of course, the whole living situation.
This is making me think, Skate v. Lilly was obviously this big deal for Ohio, but what about other states? Could we see similar legal challenges popping up in places where those property laws and domestic violence statutes might be kind of like butting heads?
Yeah, you're thinking about the bigger picture, and that's important. The way property rights and these domestic violence protections interact, it's a huge issue that every state has to deal with in some way. And while Lilly gives us some really good guidance, it's not like a magic solution that works everywhere.
Right.
Every state has its own set of laws, its own precedents, and how they interpret this whole custody and control thing, that could be totally different.
So for those legal eagles out there, the ones working on these kinds of cases in other states, what's the big takeaway from all of this? What do they need to remember?
It all comes down to really understanding the specifics of your jurisdiction. Like, State v. Lilly should remind everyone to do their homework, research those statutes, look at the case law in your state, see how courts have handled this whole property rights versus domestic violence issue before. Don't just assume that what worked in Ohio is going to work everywhere else.
So it's not just about knowing the laws, it's about understanding how they've been used before in similar cases.
Exactly. But even beyond all the legal stuff, I think State v. Lilly says something bigger about how our society is changing.
In what way?
Well, it shows that we're starting to recognize that marriage, as important as it is, it can't be used to excuse abuse or, to take away someone's basic right to be safe.
It's like we're finally realizing that domestic violence is a crime, period. It doesn't matter what the relationship is between the victim and the abuser.
That's it. And Lilly really highlights how we're making progress in strengthening those legal protections for people who are experiencing domestic violence. Like, it sends a clear message that just because you have a marriage certificate, that doesn't mean you can just do whatever you want and get away with it.
I think that's a good place to wrap things up. This deep dive into State v. Lilly has been really eye-opening. We talked about the facts of the case, the logic behind the Supreme Court's decision, those procedural details, and we even got into some of those bigger societal issues that this case brings up.
Yeah, it is amazing how one case can spark so many different conversations.
It is. It's like a domino effect. And for our listeners out there, whether you're a seasoned lawyer or a law student just starting out, State v. Lilly is definitely a case worth studying. It's got some really important lessons about how to interpret those tricky statutes, the importance of being careful about procedure, and how those legal protections for domestic violence victims are always evolving.
It's a good one to keep in mind. And, beyond all the legal details, it's a good reminder that pursuing justice, it takes work. We have to be aware of what's going on, and we have to be willing to challenge those old ways of thinking that allow harm to continue.
Well said. And on that note, we'll wrap up this deep dive. Until next time, stay curious, keep learning, and don't be afraid to ask those tough questions.